Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. Hello, fellow gamer. Welcome to episode 270 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. On this show, we discuss the craft and the art of game mastering. I've been running RPGs for over 28 years now, and I produce this show in the hopes that you can benefit from my experience, my triumphs, and my mistakes. Brett joins me again today to continue our exploration of the Dungeon Master's Guide. We are working through Chapter 9, which is the Dungeon Master's Workshop. So this chapter has a lot of different options and variants that you can use in your game or not to customize it into what you're looking for. And today we'll be talking about hitting cover, cleaving through creatures, lingering injuries, massive damage, and morale. But before we get into that, I want to remind you that I am releasing my novel, Dawn of Endless Night, on the blog. I release a chapter of that every week. I think by now there's 10 or 11 chapters up there now. So you can go check that out at starwalkerstudios.com. And it's an urban fantasy. And I just thought I'd release it on my blog and see what people think of it. So check it out. All right. So without further ado, we're going to get Brett on the show and we're going to dig into the DMG and talk about some more combat options that you can use in your game. All right, next is hitting cover.
Yeah.
This is one I always use when I remember to use it. So when a ranged attack misses a target that has cover, you can use this optional roll to determine whether the cover was struck by the attack. First, determine whether the attack roll would have hit the protected target without the cover. If the attack roll falls within a range low enough to miss the target, but high enough to strike the target if there had been no cover, the object used for cover is struck. If a creature is providing cover for the missed creature and the attack roll exceeds the AC of the covering creature is hit.
Yep.
So this is actually a lot simpler than it probably sounds. So let's say, now I'm trying to remember what they even, but the light cover, isn't it like plus two to AC? I can't remember the term.
I'm gonna say yes for now because I can't remember.
Yeah, I think that there's like one cover that's like plus two to your AC and then another that's plus five, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, let's say just for the sake of an example, you have a 15 armor class and you're taking cover behind something that's giving you a plus two to your armor class, making it 17.
Right.
And somebody tries to shoot you and they roll a 16 that would have hit your armor class of 15, but because you have a plus two bonus from cover, it doesn't hit you. So it hits the cover. So, I mean, a lot of times this is just going to be kind of flavor, but it could matter if maybe the cover is something flimsy where if it takes enough damage, the cover is gone. Or like they point out, if the cover is another creature. So let's say you're taking cover behind your friend, Grog the Barbarian.
Right.
And the 16 would hit Grog's armor class, then it hit him.
Ooh. How would you... Okay, no, that makes sense. Never mind.
So yeah, it's weird. When you try to explain it, it sounds a lot more complicated than it is. So you're just looking at what is the character's armor class normally, and then what is their armor class with the cover bonus? And if the attack misses them, but
it would have hit.
Yeah, if it would have hit them without the cover, but doesn't because of the cover, then it hits the cover.
Right.
Or if it just completely misses altogether, then it doesn't hit anything. And if cover is a creature or something with an armor class, it also has to hit that armor class.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. You would just resolve that as if the person in front was the one targeted.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, let's say in the example, you have a 15 armor class, you're getting a plus two bonus from cover
that cover is your friend Grog the Barbarian, and he has a 16 armor class.
Right.
And someone rolls a 16 to hit. Well, that misses you because it didn't beat the 17 for your cover bonus, but it hits the cover.
Right.
And it hits Grog because it hits his armor class. But let's say Grog had a 20 armor class because he's wearing like plate armor or something.
Right.
And it just like hits his armor and doesn't hurt him.
That makes sense. Really quick, you're spot on. Half cover okay. is plus two bonus to
half
AC.
Half cover, that's what it's called.
And three quarters cover is plus five.
Okay, cool.
Total cover can't be targeted.
Yeah. Awesome. So yeah. So like, let's say you got a 15 armor class and you've got three quarters cover, then with the cover bonus, your armor class is 20.
Right.
So if someone rolls between a 15 and a... Well, I guess a 20 would hit you. So between a 15 and a 19, then they're hitting the cover.
Right.
Whatever that is. And yeah, most of the time it's just probably going to be the way you describe it. But it could be something where maybe the cover is, I don't know, like a wooden wall. And maybe they do enough damage to the wall that now there's a big hole in it and you don't have cover anymore or something.
Right.
So it could matter.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Or door. Or, yeah.
I try to do the same thing with armor. You know, I think about what's your armor class with or without the armor.
Yeah.
And if to say that, oh, that arrow hit your armor.
Right.
As opposed to it just missed you.
Right. We had this conversation. That's something that I love the idea of doing.
Yeah.
It is where you're tracking. That's what we were talking about, combat. It was a previous episode.
Yeah.
And yeah, just the just adding flavor.
Yeah, because it's not going to really matter.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not going to affect the actual gameplay. But
now if you're going to go so far as to give armor hit points and say when it takes so much damage the armor falls apart.
Then, no.
But yeah, that's going to another level.
I don't want to do that.
Next we have cleaving through creatures. This reminds me of one of my favorite feats from third edition, Cleave.
AKA disarming.
Yeah, this is really cool because this is something you don't need a feat. Like if you use this rule, anybody can do it.
Yeah.
And this is something I would definitely use like with you guys in our campaign. If for some reason you were fighting like, I don't know, goblins, like something like really far beneath you. If I didn't just hand wave the encounter and say you just decimated them. I would definitely use this.
So it says if the player characters regularly fight hordes of lower level monsters, consider using this optional rule. It should speed up the fight, the encounter itself. When a melee attack reduces an undamaged creature to zero hit points, any excess damage, I love this so much, any excess damage from that attack can be carried over to the next nearby creature. The attacker targets another one, that next creature within reach, and if the original attack roll can hit it, applies any remaining damage to it. If that creature was undamaged and is likewise reduced to zero hit points, repeat this process.
Yeah.
Carrying over the remaining damage until there are no valid targets.
I like that they make the stipulation that they have to be undamaged.
Yes. Yeah.
That prevents, like, say, your wizard from shooting out five magic missiles and bringing five guys down to like, you know, single digit hit points. And then the barbarian just cleaves through all of them.
Right.
But yeah, so I think a lot of times these are just easier with examples. So let's say you're fighting a goblin or a bunch of goblins. And let's say all the goblins have two hit points.
Right.
And you hit the first goblin and you roll 10 damage. Well, that goblin takes two hit points, and then the next goblin and you could kill five of them with one hit.
Yep.
As long as they're all within reach of your weapon.
Exactly. As long as the original attack roll can hit it.
Yeah. So maybe one of the goblins is like wearing plate armor, and so that one doesn't get hit because the roll wouldn't hit it. But yeah, this is a way to speed up those combats without just hand waving them, and make the players are just. Their characters are going to feel so epic.
I love that. Yeah.
And imagine if you have like multi-attack and you've got like two or three attacks and you're cleaving with each, like you could make an attack, kill four goblins, take a step, make another attack, kill four more goblins, make it, take a step, make another attack. Like it could get pretty awesome.
That's a high to low level storytelling moment.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
A good memory.
Probably don't want to use this against your first level characters with your NPCs. Nope.
That's probably not a good idea.
The ogre takes you all out with one hit.
Yeah, it's fair to say it can work both ways.
Yeah. Yeah, but usually it's going to be the players doing this, because hopefully they're not going to be fighting things that are so far beyond them that you think about using the cleave against them.
Once again, it's important to teach your players it's okay to run.
Yes, especially at low level.
Yeah.
All right. Next, I love this one too. Injuries. This is one I feel like I forget to use sometimes.
Me too. I think we brought this up before too, but I love this.
So damage normally has no lingering effects. So this option introduces the potential for long-term injuries. So it's up to you to decide when you're going to check for one of these injuries. But here are some ideas of when you could use this. When someone takes a critical hit, which I think makes sense and is a time that I wish I would remember to use this and I never do. When it drops to zero hit points but isn't killed, or when it fails a death saving throw by 5 or more.
Oh,
that's another great time to use it that I never remember.
Yeah.
So when one of those things happens, or you just decide, hey, there's the potential for one of these injuries, they have a table that you roll on to determine what that injury is. And maybe we can just go through these kind of quick.
Sure.
What the options are.
Yeah. I would also say that this is, although it is a table set up to roll against, it could be something that you just refer to circumstantially if, you know, depending on what the hit was.
And yeah, you might want to do that too.
Yeah.
Because some of these are a lot more debilitating than others.
Yeah.
Or one might just really fit a character really well for some reason.
Right. I knew he had a limp. I just didn't know why.
Yeah.
So like the first one is lose an eye.
Yeah.
But it has disadvantage on wisdom checks that rely on sight and ranged attack rolls. So that can be very bad.
Yeah. And the eye can be restored with something like the regenerate spell. And I love that they feel the need to point out, if you have no eyes left after sustaining this injury, you're blinded.
That's good to know.
Some people need the obvious spelled out to them. So
right. You well, you know, they can't see it. So.
Number two. Yeah. Go ahead.
lose an arm or a hand. You can Luke Skywalker it. You can no longer hold anything with two hands, and you can hold only a single object at a time. Magic, such as the regenerate spell, can restore the lost appendage.
Yeah. Next is lose a foot or leg. So your speed on foot is halved. You must use a cane or a crutch to move, unless you have a peg leg or something like that. if you take the dash action, you fall prone afterwards. You have disadvantage on dex checks made to balance, and this too can be repaired with magic like the regenerate spell. So
interesting.
I do like also that these aren't necessarily permanent.
True.
And like regenerate's a mid-level spell, I think. So, you know, it could even lead to further things to do, because it's like maybe the characters can't cast regenerate, so they need to go find an NPC to like regenerate their eye or whatever.
Yeah. Which creates a side quest.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll do that for you. But first, I need you to make this basket. the next one is limp. It's fairly straightforward. Your speed on foot is reduced by 5 feet. I'm sorry. You must make a DC 10 dexterity saving throw after using the dash action. If you fail that, you fall prone. And again, magical healing removes the limp. So it's not just regenerate. It's just healing.
Healing word could do it.
Yeah.
Next is internal injury. Whenever you attempt an action in combat, you must make a DC 15 constitution save. If you fail the save, you lose your action and can't use reactions until the start of your next turn. And then this is another one that heals if you receive magical healing, or if you spend 10 days doing nothing but resting.
Ouch.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. This is good. That's the good kind of injury for people who are armored who get hit by bludgeon.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, also along those lines, broken ribs.
Yep.
this has the same effect as internal injury, except that the save DC is 10 instead of 15.
Cool. Horrible scar. There we go. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
You are disfigured to the extent that the wound can't be easily concealed. You have disadvantage on charisma persuasion checks and advantage on charisma intimidation checks. Magical healing of 6th level or higher, such as heal and regenerate, removes the scar.
Okay.
And that right there, that for me, that just set a precedent. That, and this is something I want to remember, that just in general, at least in my mind, mm-hmm. magical healing of 6th level or higher removes scars.
Oh, good point. Okay.
Because that's often something I'll make like as a flavor thing in the game is if you're injured and you just like rest to mm-hmm. recover from it and magic isn't used, then there's going to be a scar.
Right.
And then once it's healed, it's like, well, you can't like cure light wounds a scar away. Like you're just going to have that scar. But I like this idea of like, well, if the magic is powerful enough, you can actually remove scars, which is pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah.
So you can still have scarred people in the world and it makes sense.
Yeah.
But if you have a really vain player character that they really don't want that gash across their face, they can get rid of it.
Right. Or those really vicious paper.
Just might, you know, take a quest.
Yeah.
If they're not high enough level to cast 6th level spells.
That's right. Festering wound is the next one, which just sounds gross. Your hit point maximum is reduced by 1 every 24 hours the wound persists.
Ouch.
Yeah, if your hit point maximum drops to 0, you die. The wound heals if you receive magical healing. Alternatively, someone can tend to the wound and make a DC 15 medicine check using wisdom once every 24 hours. After 10 successes, the wound heals.
Wow, that's cool.
That is, yeah.
Throwback to a previous episode. Can you imagine using festering wound with the slow healing and long resting variants?
I can totally see that. That is absolutely a thing.
That'd be like Jaime Lannister in his hand. You know, it's like, yeah, this wound is going to be a major part of this campaign for at least the next 6 months. Yep.
Absolutely.
And then we have a minor scar. The scar doesn't have any adverse effect. Magical healing of 6th level or higher, such as heal or regenerate, removes the scar. So again, we're coming back to the 6th level thing.
Yeah. It's interesting to note that they don't differentiate between minor and major scars when it comes to getting rid of them.
Yeah. Let's see. It says, instead of using the effect described in the table, you can put the responsibility of representing a character's lingering injury in the hands of the player. Roll on the lingering injuries table as usual, but instead of suffering the effects described, the character gains a new flaw with the same name. It's up to the player to express the lingering injury during play, just like any other flaw, with the potential to gain inspiration when the injury affects the character in a meaningful way. So, I don't know about that. I like the mechanical stuff.
Yeah.
I could see doing both, though. I could see using the mechanical thing and saying it's a flaw, and saying, hey, if you roleplay the flaw well, you know, I'll give you inspiration or whatever. But I like the mechanical stuff. I don't think I'd want to just do the flaw.
No.
Not I like it. Came up with these cool mechanics.
Right. Yeah, I like it as being a consequence of the encounter or consequence of playing the game, telling the story.
Yeah.
Like this is, it's like the progression of the character.
I think there's other times you could use this too. Like I'm thinking like maybe you could have maybe the big bad in your campaign uses some kind of magical sword of wounding or whatever, where if you get hit by that thing, you're going to get one of these injuries.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's a vicious weapon or whatever. And that's part of its magic is that it leaves you scarred or debilitated in some way. Even
or if every wound from it gets infected. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or something like that. Or just, you know, maybe just the big boss fight, you know, any characters that take any good size hits in that get one of these or that kind of thing.
Right. And that could play out because you would hope ultimately the player characters would win that battle.
Right.
They would beat the bad guy, the main baddie. And then they would still have to, they would be stuck with or left with these lingering effects after that, that they have to deal with.
I like it. You know, for those times when doing 50 damage just doesn't seem like enough.
Yeah.
Here you go. The red dragon just engulfed you in its flaming breath. 50 damage just doesn't seem like enough. Like, no, I feel like it should have done more. I think some heavy scarring is in order here.
Come from that, at the very least.
Well, you know, this just made me think of something interesting. I'm thinking of Druinda in our campaign.
Mm-hmm.
She's a person who's blind because she was scarred from a red dragon breath, and her face is all like melted and stuff.
Yeah.
Now I'm kind of wondering, like, why didn't she just have someone in the guild cast a 6th level regenerate on her?
Yeah, which means that's probably something we should be thinking about.
Right. It would have removed the scars and brought her eyes back.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Of course, you guys already know that.
We know that she's really something else.
So I guess you know what.
No spoilers, but yeah.
You kind of think that all the people in the guild would be like, wait a minute, why doesn't she just get that healed? Why is she going around blind?
Maybe there was something that they couldn't at the time. And
like
the statute of limitations on healing is
up. Or maybe because the dragon was so powerful, there's like magic in that scarring that you can't just heal it away.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. It sucks for us because I know that dragon's coming our way soon.
Well, you did kill her kid, so.
I know. Well, more importantly, we took her treasure.
Yes. That probably is more what she's mad about. All right. So I think the next thing kind of goes right along with this.
Another segue.
Massive damage. This is another one I love to use and want to use and think sometimes I forget it when I should use it. So this makes it easier for a creature to be felled by massive damage. So this is something you can use against the player characters and they can use it against NPCs too. Mm-hmm. So when a creature takes damage from a single source equal to or greater than half its hit point maximum, it must succeed at a DC 15 con saving throw or suffer a random effect from this system shock table. So for example, a creature that has a hit point maximum of 30 must make that constitution save if it takes 15 damage or more from a single source. Now, right away, a caveat here that I'm really surprised they don't spell this out, but I would not use this with low-level characters.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Like a first-level character, even a first-level fighter probably only has at most 12 hit points, which means, I mean, there's a lot of things out there that do 6 damage or more.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I wouldn't even think about this until, you know, they're high enough level that they have enough hit points that it's going to be uncommon that they take that much damage from one hit.
Right, right.
Like, save it for those really big hits where you're like, whoa. So then we have the table that we roll on. So this is going to tell you what actually happens. And yeah, I think just like the other one, like what Brett said, you know, you don't have to roll on this. You could just choose what seems most appropriate to you.
Yeah.
So this has you rolling a D10 on a 1. The creature drops to 0 hit points. So then they'd start making death saves. On a 2 to 3, they drop to 0 hit points, but they're stable, so they don't have to make death saves. 4 to 5, they're stunned until the end of the next turn. 6 to 7, they can't take reactions and have disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks until the end of the next turn. Or 8 to 10, they can't take reactions until the end of its next turn. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, none of those are like, I remember, I think it was 2nd edition, they had this as an optional rule, and like you could die from this like pretty easily.
Well, it would take time, but if you decided the first option, or if you rolled a 1, and then lose your death saves, then that can still happen. But there's a little bit of a safety net there.
Yeah, I think in 2nd edition it was just a straight up save or die. Oh, like, geez. If you took half your hit points and damage, you made a saving throw, and if you failed, you died. I think that's how it worked.
Okay.
So this is a little better, I think.
I do like this, and it doesn't feel like it's too not OP, but it just it doesn't feel like it would lead to an instant TPK.
Right. Yeah. Or even that character dying.
Right.
Necessarily. Right. It's just going to make things interesting for a couple rounds.
Yeah.
And I do like that it's also short in duration. So like if they get disadvantaged or they lose their reactions, it's only for one turn. It's not right. for like the whole combat.
Exactly. Exactly. So how does that work with the zero hit points? So those just come back after.
Well, no, those you're at zero, but the other ones, like they're stunned until the next turn.
Oh, I see. I see.
Or okay. if you can't take reactions and have disadvantage on attack and ability checks, that's till the next turn.
Till the end. All right.
Yeah. That makes sense. So none of, I mean, those could have been for the rest of the combat or until you get healed or something like that.
6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just one turn. So it's like, it's definitely going to make an impact on the battle and
yeah,
going to change things, but it's not, like you said, it's not like now we're going to TPK because someone took massive damage. It just yep. makes things more interesting. Next, we have morale. Now, this one I do use. I use this all the time.
Ooh.
Because I find myself often wondering, as a GM, would the goblins just run away at this point?
Right.
And, I mean, if the answer is clear to you what they would do, then just do that. But for those times when you're not sure, this is a mechanic you can use. And so it's called morale. And basically, this is just a check you can make to determine if NPCs are going to run away because they're just intimidated by the players or whatever. So they give some situations where this might happen, where you might think, oh, I think they'd just run away. The creature is surprised. The creature is reduced to half its hit points or fewer for the first time in the battle. The creature has no way to harm the opposing side on its turn. And then a whole group of creatures. So that was for like an individual creature.
Right.
And then the whole group could flee. If one of these things happen, all the creatures in the group are surprised. The group's leader is reduced to 0 hit points, incapacitated, taken prisoner, or removed from the battle. Mm-hmm. Or the group is reduced to half its original side with no losses on the opposing side. So anytime one of those things happen, you could be like, hey, you know, they might just run away at this point or surrender. So to determine if they do that, you have the creature or group of creatures make a DC 10 wisdom saving throw. So you either have an individual make that, or if it's a group, you have the leader of right. the group make that roll. If the opposition is overwhelming, the saving throw is made with disadvantage, or you can decide that the save fails automatically, at which point, like, you don't need this system. Just are like, they'd run away because they're outmatched and they know it. If a group's leader can't make the saving throw for whatever reason, have the creature in the group with the next highest charisma score make the saving throw instead. So I guess if they're unconscious or something.
Right. That answers the question I had about the group's leader being reduced to 0 hit points.
On a failed save, the affected creature or group flees by the most expeditious route. If escape is impossible, the creatures or group surrenders. If a creature or group that surrenders is attacked by its conquerors, the battle might resume, and it's unlikely that further attempts to flee or surrender will be made. Which, that just makes sense. If you try to surrender and they try to kill you anyway, like, you're not going to try to surrender anymore.
Yeah, that whole fight or flight thing is, yeah.
A failed saving throw isn't always to the adventurer's benefit. For example, an ogre that flees from combat might put the rest of the dungeon on alert or mm-hmm. run off a treasure that the characters had hoped to plunder.
Very, very true.
This can also be a great way. Of course, in these situations, I wouldn't use the system, but sometimes battles are just going along and it's like, at this point, it's obvious the PCs are going to win. We're just going to roll dice for another half an hour for that to happen.
Right.
So I guess in that case, I usually just have them surrender or run away, or I'll just be like, and you guys kill the rest of them. But if you want, you could do this morale check.
Right. Yeah. And if it drops to, circumstantially, if it drops to like they had begun the fight outnumbering the party.
Yeah.
And it gets to the point where they're at one-on-one now, or they're. Or like three of them are left and they're all being ganged up by the group, then that just makes sense that they would drop and run.
Yeah. And you can also set this kind of stuff up ahead of time. Like, I see this in Wizards Adventures a lot, where they'll say, if the dragon is reduced to 50 hit points, it flies away. for that right. kind of thing. So you know, you could even decide for yourself ahead of time, oh, if this character takes this much damage, they'll right. surrender or they'll run away or whatever.
Right. Keeping in mind that most intelligent creatures have that self-preservation.
Yeah.
In them. So and not just adding a level of reality to it, but adding the adding more to a story where otherwise it would just be, you know, kill everybody in the encounter.
Yeah.
and like every encounter has to end with the complete obliteration of whoever you're coming up against.
Yes. And that's a really important point, because if your assumption as a DM is like the assumption is that opponents will fight to the death.
Right.
And times when they don't do that are exceptions to that assumption. Like, that's not realistic, and you're going to have a very hack and slash campaign. And we've probably all run or played or seen actual plays of campaigns like that, where everybody fights to death all the time. And it's right. kind of silly. I think it's more realistic to have the assumption be that unless there's a reason otherwise, most things won't fight to the death. Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, things that will fight to the death are sometimes animals or things of that level of intelligence, depending on the situation. Because even animals aren't dumb enough to just throw their lives away.
No.
But if they're protecting their young, or if they're just really hungry or really angry, they might fight to the death. But any kind of an intelligent opponent, unless there's a good reason or they're fighting for a cause they really believe in or something like that, again, an exception...
Right.
They're not going to fight to the death. They're going to surrender or try to run away or something.
Yeah.
Or unless your player characters have made it pretty clear that they don't take prisoners.
Right.
Then they won't, you know, obviously I'm not going to surrender to you if you're known for killing your prisoners or whatever, you know.
And there's no path of escape.
Yeah. Right. Right. But yeah, it's just more realistic, and it makes your villains more interesting if they're not just willing to fall on the PC swords and give them XP, you know?
Right.
It's not a video game, you know? Like. And I mean, these days, even a lot of video games are more realistic than that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And I use this all the time. I think sometimes I forget the DC 10 part, and I'll get a little like, oh crap, what do I make this save DC?
Yeah. So
I like that they're like, it's DC 10.
And it's pretty basic. There's no real modifier to it, is there?
Just advantage or disadvantage.
Right. And it's just a wisdom save.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would only use this when you're not sure. You know, if they're fighting a villain that you're like, you're in this villain's head, you know this character really well, and you're like, okay, at this point they would surrender and wait to fight another day, or they'd escape, teleport away, then just do that. This is just for when you're not sure what they would do.
Right. And if you're dealing with a higher level NPC or the boss battle or something like that, you have to take into consideration well, you don't have to, but it's fun to take into consideration what kind of bad guy this is. If you're dealing with a wizard or some circumstance like that where they're highly intelligent and their attacks are basically their intellect, right? That kind of a character, it could be prone to, at the first sign of taking some heavy hits and realizing that there's a chance that they might not succeed in their plans, or they might not be able to take out these PCs. First sign of real trouble, when they start losing heavy HP, they're going to try to find a way out.
Yeah.
And
if the PCs are attacking them in their lair, there's a good chance they have some kind of escape plan
right
in place, you know. And Wizards does a pretty good job of that in their adventures. I've seen that more than once where, you know, it'll be a beholder or a dragon or a hag or whatever, and they'll be like, here's this creature's escape plan. If they're fighting in their lair and things start to go badly, here's what they'll do. You know, they're going to cast invisibility, and then they're going to teleport, or they're going to go to the escape hatch or whatever it is. And
right.
And another cool thing about that is then you can bring them back again. So, yeah. So, you know, instead of them just killing your evil whatever it is, and that's the end of it, they can escape and then they can fight them again someday.
And then it becomes an epic battle.
Yeah. And maybe now that this NPC has fought the player characters, they'll be better prepared next time. They know some of their tactics and what their magic items are. And
exactly. Yeah. The PCs have grown. The NPC has grown.
Yeah.
And then the same, it's not the same battle when you go back to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the end of the combat or the action stuff.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts or comments on this?
For the most part, I think all of these are great ideas.
Except for the weapon speed thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that, again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. There's still room to use that.
Yes, in a certain situation, that could be just the thing.
Yep. Yep.
I really hope I remember that if we ever have some kind of like battle between champions or something.
Yeah, yeah. That would be a lot of fun.
That was actually in the Numenera adventure we just finished. Mm-hmm. When you were like, oh, there were options other than combat. One of the possible options was those creatures, the beetle creatures. I can't even remember what they were called now. One of the possibilities was they had a champion, and there could have been a fight between your champion and their champion kind of thing.
Did we have a champion?
Yeah, you have to figure out who that is. There's a fight among the PCs to figure out who the champion is.
Yeah, it's the preliminary fight.
but yeah, that would have been a cool thing to have for something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that would be neat.
To turn it into more... Yeah, because a battle between two people with the way initiative and everything works in this game, it can get really predictable and kind of just like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So this would make it more interesting.
And it gives bonuses or penalties for changing up your tactics.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love that. Like, you got the barbarian who always uses a great axe, mm-hmm. but there might actually be a reason for him to use a dagger just because it's faster. Or
his fist, yeah.
Yeah, or yeah, his fist. And I love that. Like that's more realism in a good way.
Yes, yeah.
As opposed to, I don't know, looking for realism in ways that's going to just bog things down. And
well, in a cinematic way, in a way that tells a better story ultimately.
Not in a let's all get out our calculators.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we should mention that again. We said it in one of the previous episodes, but when you're thinking about, you know, these options, you know, just don't think about does it make sense to you?
Right.
But what's the play going to be like? What's it, if you use this at the table, what's the experience going to be? And is that what you're going to like and what the players are going to like?
Right. That's exactly it.
Like the weapon speed, it totally makes sense. It's totally more realistic and believable.
Oh, sure.
At certain times, it's probably not going to be what you want to use.
Right.
Because, yeah, I was definitely one of those GMs where all my arguments began with, well, to me, it makes most sense, or it's most realistic that it would work like that. And I would come up with whole mechanical things based on trying to make things more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I was that way for a long time. It's only fairly recently that I kind of started to realize that a lot of that stuff was just making my life a lot more difficult.
It's that core rule where you rejuvenate all your HP.
Yeah.
Change the world.
Well, I think that's good for today, Brett.
Sure.
Next up is creating a monster.
Yeah, and that's a monster of a...
Yeah.
Like
that will be... That will probably be a thing all to itself.
Cool.
I don't know. Maybe for that, maybe we should...
Do you want to make one?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe we should each make our own monster or maybe make one together while we discuss it.
Ooh, that'd be
something
fun.
Like, yeah, because I think a lot of this stuff, it's easiest to explain with examples.
Yeah.
Because you just read the rules and it sounds really confusing, like the way they word it. And it's a lot easier if you just give an example. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's not that complicated. Like the whole thing of hitting cover, like to read the description, you're like, what?
Yeah.
But then when you give an example, it's like, oh, okay, that's really easy.
It's so yeah. Yep, yep.
It's like, here's their armor class without the cover. Here it is with the cover. if it misses them, but it would have hit them without the cover, then it hits
the cover. Hit the cover. Yeah.
Like you can do that on the fly once you wrap your brain around it.
Oh, totally. Yeah. That makes it so much easier. It actually, it follows the same guidelines we were talking about when we were discussing, I think it was armor when we were talking about combat and whether the armor gets hit or whether the attack completely misses. One of the things that I wanted to try doing was to, I think I described it as like, taking the original roll and then adding the armor to it. If it would have hit the original roll, it would hit the armor instead of, if the armor is what's changing the success to a failure,
right,
then the armor is what takes the hit.
Yeah. So, I think we've used it quite a bit with Wall with a shield.
Yes, we have.
Where we'll say, oh, well, here's Wall's armor class without the shield. Here's it with, so the shield's giving him, I don't know, +4 to his armor class.
Right.
So if it misses him by 4 or less, then he blocked it with the shield.
Yeah.
Just kind of as a guide for just the flavor of when you're just dodging or when you're using the shield to block something. And
yeah, it just helps to describe it better.
Yeah.
So that we get a mental image of what's actually happening, whether you're able to dodge out of the way or not mechanically dodge, but dodge out of the way or if you take the hit and the armor does the work.
Yeah, I think we should build a monster together. I think that
would be good. Let's do it. Okay.
Let's like, before we record, let's decide on like the basic, like, is it going to be a dragon or an elemental or what is it going to be? And then we'll figure out the stats and everything.
We can make a new kind of dragon. Nah, dragons have been worked. Let's do something else. Okay. Yeah. I'll let you know if I have any ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That'd be kind of fun. And then, yeah, we can go through the steps of what would this thing's CR be?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah, there is an interesting discussion on one of the more recent Sage Advice where Jeremy Crawford was talking about creating your own monsters.
Yeah.
And he kind of, like, he was talking about, this isn't for those of you who are publishing your own supplements as third-party publishers and you want to know how to design a monster. This is for just a GM who wants to design a monster for their campaign. And he did confirm that there are things that they do that aren't in the DMG. You
like
know,
secret mechanics.
Right. Yeah. Like this is going to get you close, but it's not necessarily how they're doing it.
Right.
Which I long suspected that just from trying to reverse engineer some of their monsters.
You did an episode where you tried to do that backwards and it didn't work.
Yeah. So there's definitely, you know, and I think he said something about they have these like massive spreadsheets that they use to figure the CR. And, you know, this is kind of a slightly simplified version.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as a DM just running a campaign, you don't have to worry about how's this going to work at 50 different tables. You just have to worry about your players in this one session. And
right. That makes sense.
You can adjust on the fly. Like he's a big fan of adjusting hit points on the fly. So but still staying within the range that's given.
Right.
So I don't have a monster book, but you might have a monster that says it has like 5d8 plus 40 hit points and then an average of 60 hit points or whatever.
Right.
So if you're running a combat with a monster and you decided it has 60 hit points and the players are going to obliterate it in a round, and you think that might be a little anticlimactic, you could say, oh, well, instead of having average, it has maximum hit points.
Right.
Whatever that would be for that number of hit dice. Or if the combat is way too hard for some reason, you could reduce the number. And, you know, they're never going to know that you did that. So.
Right. So for the, that makes sense. I don't think I ever really consider how it would be played at other tables.
Yeah.
But then I've never published anything I did, so that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you really only need to worry about that if other people are going to run it.
Right, right.
Which that's something I learned when I published an adventure was the massive difference in doing something like that versus I realized how many things I just kind of like don't worry about because I'm like, oh, I'll handle that at the table.
Right,
You know, like, oh, I'll figure that out during the combat, you know, or whatever. But if you're going to publish it, you got to think of all that ahead of time.
You.
Yeah, it wasn't near as much fun as I thought it would be. It's a lot more fun just coming up with stuff for your own players.
Yeah.
That you know and have some idea what they're going to do. And
yeah, exactly.
What they like and what they don't like.
And you
like.
Don't have to plan the whole thing right up front.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 270. If you'd like to get a hold of me, you can shoot me an email at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. And you can call my voicemail 951-GMJ-LEX-1. That's 951-465-5391. Also, we have communities on MeWe and Discord, so you can join us there and connect with myself and other listener GMs. Great place to discuss your campaign or your adventure or your character or ask questions or whatever you want, really. So you can find links to those in the show notes as well at starwalkerstudios.com. Finally, if you enjoy the show and you'd like to help keep the show coming, you can find all the great ways you can help me out at starwalkerstudios.com/support. Probably the best thing you could do is to check out one of my self-published D&D supplements, the most recent of which is Adventures of Primordia, which is a bunch of options for player characters that I've homebrewed for my campaigns, cleric domains, spells, magic items, subrace options, all kinds of stuff. So you can check that out on the store at starwalkerstudios.com. Also, you can become a patron of the show, and you can find a link to my Patreon in the show notes as well. So however you support Game Master's Journey, I really, really appreciate it. I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I hope you have a chance to run your favorite RPG. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music, courtesy of Cloudwalker, Tranceboy, Renfield, Stanko, and Ish. See the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.